Time to get lit up, folks. It is Think and Grow Rich Thursday, October 18th, 2012. My name is Paul Hutchings, dialing in from beautiful Southeast Idaho. Excited to be with you. Excited to be starting my work day with entrepreneurs all over the world who are passionate, who are coming to the day with energy and faith and desire. And I'm excited for what you have to rub off on me during this call. And I hope you're excited for that to happen to you as well. And I'm really excited about the content of the call today, folks. You know, we've been talking the last few days. I've shared this quote from you with you by Jim Rohn several times now, where he said, "Imagination supported by faith invested in labor works miracles." And we've been talking about this idea of imagination and how through imagination and through meditation and prayer and quiet time, all of this stuff mixed together, we can gain access to ideas, inspiration, infinite intelligence. And today, we're going to learn one of the most fascinating stories I think I've ever read by Dr. Napoleon Hill, where he goes into detail how he used regularly his imagination to gain access to stupendous ideas. So we're going to jump right into the chapter today. This is chapter 14, The Sixth Sense, The Door to the Temple of Wisdom. And I read this morning before I got on the call, and I've got to tell you, my mind was stepped up to a higher rate of vibration, and I have a feeling that's going to happen to all of us on the call as we tune in, as we pay close attention, and as we listen to what Dr. Napoleon Hill has to share with us this morning. This is the 13th step toward riches. The 13th principle is known as the sixth sense, through which infinite intelligence may and will communicate voluntarily without any effort from or demands by the individual. This principle is the apex of the philosophy. It can be assimilated, understood, and applied only by first mastering the other 12 principles. The sixth sense is that portion of the subconscious mind which has been referred to as the creative imagination. It has also been referred to as the receiving set through which ideas, plans, and thoughts flash into the mind. The flashes are sometimes called hunches or inspirations. The sixth sense defies description. It cannot be described to a person who has not mastered the other principles of this philosophy, because such a person has no knowledge and no experience with which the sixth sense may be compared. Understanding of the sixth sense comes only by meditation through mind development from within. The sixth sense is probably the medium of contact between the finite mind of man and infinite intelligence. And for this reason, it is a mixture of both the mental and the spiritual. It is believed to be the point at which the mind of man contacts the universal mind. After you have mastered the principles described in this book, you will be prepared to accept as truth a statement which may otherwise be incredible to you. Namely, through the aid of the sixth sense, you will be warned of impending dangers in time to avoid them, and notified of opportunities in time to embrace them. There comes to your aid and to do your bidding with the development of the sixth sense a guardian angel who will open to you at all times the door to the temple of wisdom. Whether or not this is a statement of truth, you will never know except by following the instructions described in the pages of this book or some similar method of procedure. The author is not a believer in nor an advocate of miracles, for the reason that he has enough knowledge of nature to understand that nature never deviates from her established laws. Some of her laws are so incomprehensible that they produce what appear to be miracles. The sixth sense comes as near to being a miracle as anything I have ever experienced, and it appears so only because I do not understand the method by which this principle is operated. This much the author does know, that there is a power, or a first cause, or an intelligence, which permeates every atom of matter and embraces every unit of energy perceptible to man, that this infinite intelligence converts acorns into oak trees, causes water to flow downhill in response to the laws of gravity, follows night with day, and winter with summer, each maintaining its proper place in relationship to the other. This intelligence may, through the principles of this philosophy, be induced to aid in transmuting desires into concrete or material form. The author has this knowledge because he has experimented with it and has experienced it. Step by step through the preceding chapters, you have been led to this, the last principle. If you have mastered each of the preceding principles, you are now prepared to accept, without being skeptical, the stupendous claims made here. If you have not mastered the other principles, you must do so before you may determine definitely whether or not the claims made in this chapter are fact or fiction. While I was passing through the age of hero worship, I found myself trying to imitate those whom I most admired. Moreover, I discovered that the element of faith with which I endeavored to imitate my idols gave me great capacity to do so quite successfully. I have never entirely divested myself of this habit of hero worship, although I have passed the age commonly given over to such. My experience has taught me that the next best thing to being truly great is to emulate the great by feeling and action as nearly as possible. Long before I had ever written a line for publication or endeavored to deliver a speech in public, I followed the habit of reshaping my own character by trying to imitate the 9 men whose lives and life works had been most impressive to me. These 9 men were Emerson, Paine, Edison, Darwin, Lincoln, Burbank, Napoleon, Ford, Carnegie. Every night, over a long period of years, I held an imaginary council meeting with this group, whom I called my invisible counselors. The procedure was this. Just before going to sleep each night, I would shut my eyes and see in my imagination this group of men seated with me around my council table. Here I had not only an opportunity to sit among those whom I considered to be great, but I actually dominated the group by serving as the chairman. I had a very definite purpose in indulging my imagination through these nightly meetings. My purpose was to rebuild my own character so it would represent a composite of the characters of my imaginary counselors. Realizing, as I did early in life, that I had to overcome the handicap of birth in an environment of ignorance and superstition, I deliberately assigned myself the task of voluntary rebirth through the method described here. Building character through autosuggestion. Being an earnest student of psychology, I knew, of course, that all men have become what they are because of their dominating thoughts and desires. I knew that every deeply seated desire has the effect of causing one to seek outward expression through which that desire may be transmuted into reality. I knew that self-suggestion is a powerful factor in building character, that it is, in fact, the sole principle through which character is builded. With this knowledge of the principles of mind operation, I was fairly well armed with the equipment needed in rebuilding my character. In these imaginary council meetings, I called on my cabinet members for the knowledge I wished each to contribute, addressing myself to each member in audible words as follows. Mr. Emerson, I desire to acquire from you the marvelous understanding of nature which distinguished your life. I ask that you make an impress upon my subconscious mind of whatever qualities you possessed, which enabled you to understand and adapt yourself to the laws of nature. I ask that you assist me in reaching and drawing upon whatever sources of knowledge are available to this end. Mr. Burbank, I request that you pass on to me the knowledge which enabled you to so harmonize the laws of nature that you caused the cactus to shed its thorns and become an edible food. Give me access to the knowledge which enabled you to make 2 blades of grass grow where but one grew before, and helped you to blend the coloring of the flowers with more splendor and harmony, for you alone have successfully gilded the lily. Napoleon, I desire to acquire from you, by emulation, the marvelous ability you possess to inspire men, and to arouse them to greater and more determined spirit of action. also to acquire the spirit of enduring faith, which enabled you to turn defeat into victory and to surmount staggering obstacles. Emperor of Fate, King of Chance, Man of Destiny, I salute you. Mr. Payne, I desire to acquire from you the freedom of thought and the courage and clarity with which to express convictions which so distinguished you. Mr. Darwin, I wish to acquire from you the marvelous patience and ability to study cause and effect without bias or prejudice, so exemplified by you in the field of natural science. Mr. Lincoln, I desire to build into my own character the keen sense of justice, the untiring spirit of patience, the sense of humor, the human understanding, and the tolerance which were your distinguishing characteristics. Mr. Carnegie, I am already indebted to you for my choice of a life work, which has brought me great happiness and peace of mind. I wish to acquire a thorough understanding of the principles of organized effort, which you used so effectively in the building of a great industrial enterprise. Mr. Ford, you have been among the most helpful of the men who have supplied much of the material essential to my work. I wish to acquire your spirit of persistence, the determination, poise, and self-confidence, which have enabled you to master poverty, organize, unify, and simplify human effort, so I may help others to follow in your footsteps. Mr. Edison, I have seated you nearest to me at my right because of the personal cooperation you have given me during my research into the causes of success and failure. I wish to acquire from you the marvelous spirit of faith, with which you have uncovered so many of nature's secrets, the spirit of unremitting toil with which you have so often wrested victory from defeat. My method of addressing the members of the imaginary cabinet would vary according to the traits of character in which I was, for the moment, most interested in acquiring. I studied the records of their lives with painstaking care. After some months of this nightly procedure, I was astounded by the discovery that these imaginary figures became apparently real. Each of these 9 men developed individual characteristics which surprised me. For example, Lincoln developed the habit of always being late, then walking around in solemn parade. When he came in, he walked very slowly with his hands clasped behind him, and once in a while, he would stop as he passed and rest his hand momentarily upon my shoulder. He always wore an expression of seriousness upon his face. Rarely did I see him smile. The cares of a sundered nation made him grave. That was not true of the others. Burbank and Payne often indulged in witty repartee, which seemed at times to shock the other members of the cabinet. One night, Payne suggested that I prepare a lecture on the Age of Reason and deliver it from the pulpit of a church which I formerly attended. Many around the table laughed heartily at the suggestion. Not Napoleon. He drew his mouth down at the corners and groaned so loudly that all turned and looked at him with amazement. To him, the church was but a pawn of the state, not to be reformed, but to be used as a convenient inciter to mass activity by the people. On one occasion, Burbank was late. When he came, he was excited with enthusiasm and explained that he had been late because of an experiment he was making through which he hoped to be able to grow apples on any sort of tree. Payne chided him by reminding him that it was an apple which started all the trouble between man and woman. Darwin chuckled heartily as he suggested that Payne should watch out for little serpents when he went into the forest to gather apples, as they had the habit of growing into big snakes. Emerson observed, "No serpents, no apples," and Napoleon remarked, "No apples, no state." Lincoln developed the habit of always being the last one to leave the table after each meeting. On one occasion, he leaned across the end of the table, his arms folded, and remained in that position for many minutes. I made no attempt to disturb him. Finally, he lifted his head slowly, got up and walked to the door, then turned around, came back, and laid his hand on my shoulder and said, "My boy, you will need much courage if you remain steadfast in carrying out your purpose in life. But remember, when difficulties overtake you, the common people have common sense. Adversity will develop it." One evening, Edison arrived ahead of all the others. He walked over and seated himself at my left, where Emerson was accustomed to sit, and said, "You are destined to witness the discovery of the secret of life. When the time comes, you will observe that life consists of great swarms of energy or entities, each as intelligent as human beings think themselves to be. These units of life group together like hives of bees and remain together until they disintegrate through lack of harmony. These units have differences of opinion, the same as human beings, and often fight amongst themselves. These meetings, which you are conducting, will be very helpful to you. They will bring to your rescue some of the same units of life which serve the members of your cabinet during their lives. These units are eternal. They never die. Your own thoughts and desires serve as a magnet which attracts units of life from the great ocean of life out there. Only the friendly units are attracted, the ones which harmonize with the nature of your desires." The other members of the cabinet began to enter the room. Edison got up and slowly walked around to his seat. Edison was still living when this happened. It impressed me so greatly that I went to see him and told him about the experience. He smiled broadly and said, "Your dream was more a reality than you may imagine it to have been." He added no further explanation to this statement. The other members of these meetings became so realistic that I became fearful of their consequences and discontinued them for several months. The experiences were so uncanny, I was afraid if I continued them, I would lose sight of the fact that the meetings were purely experiences of my imagination. Some 6 months after I had discontinued the practice, I was awakened one night, or thought I was, when I saw Lincoln standing at my bedside. He said, "The world will soon need your services. It is about to undergo a period of chaos which will cause men and women to lose faith and become panic-stricken. Go ahead with your work and complete your philosophy. That is your mission to life. If you neglect it for any cause whatsoever, you will be reduced to a primal state and be compelled to retrace the cycles through which you have passed during thousands of years." I was unable to tell the following morning whether I had dreamed this or had actually been awake, and I have never since found out which it was. But I do know that the dream, if it were a dream, was so vivid in my mind the next day that I resumed my meetings the following night. At our next meeting, the members of my cabinet all filed into the room together and stood at their accustomed places at the council table, where Lincoln raised a glass and said, "Gentlemen, let us drink a toast to a friend who has returned to the fold." After that, I began to add new members to my cabinet. Until now, it consists of more than 50. Among them, Christ, St. Paul, Galileo, Copernicus, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, Homer, Voltaire, Bruno, Spinoza, Drummond, Kant, Schopenhauer, Newton, Confucius, Elbert Hubbard, Bryan, Ingersoll, Wilson, and William James. This is the first time that I have had the courage to mention this. Heretofore, I have remained quiet on the subject because I knew from my own attitude in connection with such matters that I would be misunderstood if I described my unusual experience. I have been emboldened now to reduce my experience to the printed page because I am now less concerned about what they say than I was in the years that have passed. One of the blessings of maturity is that it sometimes brings one greater courage to be truthful, regardless of what those who do not understand may think or say. Lest I be misunderstood, I wish here to state most emphatically that I still regard my cabinet meetings as being purely imaginary. But I feel entitled to suggest that while the members of my cabinet may be purely fictional and the meetings existent only in my own imagination, they have led me to glorious paths of adventure, rekindled an appreciation of true greatness, encouraged creative endeavor, and emboldened the expression of honest thought. Somewhere in the cell structure of the brain is located an organ which receives vibrations of thought, ordinarily called hunches. So far, science has not discovered where this organ of the sixth sense is located, but that is not important. The fact remains that human beings do receive accurate knowledge through sources other than the physical senses. Such knowledge generally is received when the mind is under the influence of extraordinary stimulation. Any emergency which arouses the emotions and causes the heart to beat more rapidly than normal may, and generally does, bring the sixth sense into action. Anyone who has experienced a near accident while driving knows that on such occasions, the sixth sense often comes to one's rescue and aids by split seconds in avoiding the accident. These facts are mentioned preliminary to a statement of fact which I shall now make, namely, that during my meetings with the invisible counselors, I find my mind most receptive to ideas, thoughts, and knowledge which reach me through the sixth sense. I can truthfully say that I owe entirely to my invisible counselors full credit for such ideas, facts, or knowledge as I have received through inspiration. On scores of occasions when I have faced emergencies, some of them so grave that my life was in jeopardy, I have been miraculously guided past these difficulties through the influence of my invisible counselors. My original purpose in conducting council meetings with imaginary beings was solely that of impressing my own subconscious mind through the principle of autosuggestion with certain characteristics which I desired to acquire. In more recent years, my experimentation has taken on an entirely different trend. I now go to my imaginary counselors with every difficult problem which confronts me and my clients. The results are often astonishing, although I do not depend entirely on this form of counsel. You, of course, have recognized that this chapter covers a subject with which a majority of people are not familiar. The sixth sense is a subject that will be of great interest and benefit to the person whose aim is to accumulate vast wealth. But it need not claim the attention of those whose desires are more modest. Henry Ford undoubtedly understands and makes practical use of the sixth sense. His vast business and financial operations make it necessary for him to understand and use this principle. The late Thomas A. Edison understood and used the sixth sense in connection with the development of inventions, especially those involving basic patents and in connection with which he had no human experience and no accumulated knowledge to guide him, as was the case while he was working on the talking machine and the moving picture machine. Nearly all great leaders, such as Napoleon, Bismarck, Joan of Arc, Christ, Buddha, Confucius, and Muhammad, understood and probably made use of the sixth sense almost continuously. The major portion of their greatness consisted of their knowledge of this principle. The sixth sense is not something that one can take off and put on at will. Ability to use this great power comes slowly through application of the other principles outlined in this book. Seldom does any individual come into workable knowledge of the sixth sense before the age of 40. More often, the knowledge is not available until one is well past the age of 50, and this for the reason that the spiritual forces with which the sixth sense is so closely related do not mature and become usable except through years of meditation, self-examination, and serious thought. No matter who you are or what may have been your purpose in reading this book, you can profit by it without understanding the principle described in this chapter. This is especially true if your major purpose is that of accumulation of money or other material things. The chapter on the sixth sense was included because the book is designed for the purpose of presenting a complete philosophy by which individuals may unerringly guide themselves into attaining whatever they ask of life. The starting point of all achievement is desire. The finishing point is that brand of knowledge which leads to understanding. Understanding of self, understanding of others, understanding of the laws of nature, recognition, and understanding of happiness. This sort of understanding comes in its fullness only through familiarity with and use of the principle of the sixth sense. Hence, that principle had to be included as a part of this philosophy, for the benefit of those who demand more than money. Having read the chapter, you must have observed that while reading it, you are lifted to a high level of mental stimulation. Splendid! Come back to this again a month from now, read it once more, and observe that your mind will soar to a still higher level of stimulation. Repeat this experience from time to time, giving no concern as to how much or how little you learn at the time, and eventually you will find yourself in possession of a power that will enable you to throw off discouragement, master fear, overcome procrastination, and draw freely upon your imagination. Then you will have felt the touch of that unknown something, which has been the moving spirit of every truly great thinker, leader, artist, musician, writer, statesman. Then you will be in a position to transmute your desires into their physical or financial counterpart as easily as you may lie down and quit at the first sign of opposition. And we're going to go ahead and stop there. What a chapter, folks. One thing that, so much is contained in this chapter, so much that I don't understand. One comment that I will make before I open up the lines is just the fascinating way in which Dr. Napoleon Hill learned to take control and use his imagination for his own benefit. I mean, we just went through one of the most vivid descriptions of someone who literally mastered the use of the imagination. And, you know, as I read this and I think about the way that Dr. Napoleon Hill used his imagination to literally construct fictional characters of more than 50 people to sit around a table that he would consult with on a nice nightly basis, I ask myself, you know, am I using my imagination to its fullest potential? Am I anywhere close to using my imagination to what it can be used for as demonstrated by Dr. Napoleon Hill? And my personal answer is a resounding no way, not even close. And I know I've got a lot of work to do in this area. But it's fascinating, isn't it? Doesn't it lift your mind to a higher awareness, to a higher vision of what may be possible for each of us in our lives as we tap into these powers that we have maybe lying latent within us? It is exciting. I'm going to go ahead and open up the lines.
Okay. Hey, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Melvin.
Oh, a lot of
question.
Lot of you
name
there.
Of the book, please. What is the name of the book?
Oh, the name of the book is Think and Grow Rich. This is the Think and Grow Rich call. Think and Grow Rich by Dr. Napoleon Hill.
Thank you.
Yeah, in fact, it's a book that I recommend that everyone they know read. It's the most powerful book that I, once again, have ever read. And I know a lot of people speak of the Bible, and I've learned a lot of things and got a lot of things from the Bible, but the most complete book that I've ever read and got the most from is Think and Grow Rich. It is truly a very practical and very positive and very useful book. A lot of things you covered there, Paul. I just wanted to say that the more you believe in oneself, and the more you seek the truth, the more you will bring yourself into utilizing and be more locked into the sixth sense. But when you question yourself and doubt yourself, you quiet that voice that's actually speaking through you. You're not acting on those hints. You're saying something later on like, oh, darn, I knew I should have turned at this corner, or things of that nature, because it spoke to you, but you didn't listen to it. But when you learn to relax and trust yourself and believe in you, and you flow with that, it just works in your life on a daily basis. And you learn not to question it. It takes time to do that, but that's what can happen. I know the other day we spoke a little bit about health and the fact that people need to get themselves in the best health they can get into, because also to the degree that mind, body, and spirit, to the degree that those things are in balance and you have what we call, you put yourself more at ease. And speaking about at ease is just the opposite of disease. So to the degree that those three things are together, and you put yourself at ease, you also put yourself in a position to be more able to use this thing called the sixth sense. It also said something about taking action. Now, there's two things the sixth sense can have you do. One, it could come to you to have you take action without giving thought, because there's no time for the thought. You need to be taking action. And there's another time with the sixth sense that you can just raise one's consciousness when you're meditating or in a relaxed state. So there's both of those things that apply there. It's interesting, too, you said something there about Napoleon, and it jumped out at me when he was speaking about the church and how much it's tied into the state and how it is to be a tool to manipulate and use people. And that's often why I speak of it so often, is because people need to learn how to separate the one from the other. You know, it's kind of like eating corn. You don't eat everything. You throw away the parts of it, and then there's the other parts you take the goodness out of. And that's one of the things that we need to learn how to do. And the last point I just wanted to touch on real quick is value more than money. I know it's the Think and Grow Rich call, but thinking and growing rich, money is only a portion of that. There are things that are even more valuable. Health is definitely one of them. And I've been around a lot of people, and I've had a lot of experiences where people had a chance to do the right thing or do what's going to be most profitable to them. And I've seen time and time again people go down the road of what's going to be most profitable to them rather than doing the right thing. And believe me, if we're spending more time on doing the right thing rather than what's the most profitable, we'd have a different world we're living in. And with that, back to you, Paul.
Very good points to ponder and consider, Melvin. Appreciate those. Star 6, come on out.
Good morning, my friend. Paul, Mr. Hutchins, how are you?
I'm excellent. Rick, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, my friend. I love your energy. I love your attitude, your style, just the way you present yourself. Melvin covered some wonderful topics. I don't know if Melvin are taking notes, but, man, he just seemed like he's able to see everything that was laid out. My friend, we talked about knowledge. I've heard great men say knowledge isn't power. And I hear it is power. It is more powerful when it goes into effect. In fact, the knowledge that we're gaining on this, my friends, I want you to really consider this. The information, the people running around out there without a purpose, without this kind of information, remembering in your memory that you can pull this reserve stuff up when you need it. You can learn to respect hunches and realize what those hunches are. If you have no knowledge of these, you're going to dismiss them, disrespect them, disrespect yourself, disrespect the whole power within you. My friend, the mind is like a motor running without its load. It's so incredible that people can repeat stuff without giving it any real thought, just because they heard some great person said it, and over, it just becomes this repetition and not real thought about it. You think about this thing, the amount of information, the amount of knowledge we're gleaning here, just imagine you don't know, you don't have this knowledge. How can people say that knowledge is not power? When people start to hear that, they dismiss it. They don't want to go out and gain the knowledge. But you have to have the knowledge to put it into action to gain the power from it. You see, it is so incredible. These are the different tools you need to get in tune. If you don't have the knowledge about these things or going out seeking it, you cannot be in tune with the body and mind becomes one. So you are able to receive, prepared like a fertile garden if it's not ready to receive what it is, and it cannot bear fruit. It is really that simple. Money doesn't come before a person is of value. where Melvin thought about the different areas that you should be able to balance yourself, your life. Friend, this is what happens. Once you are so in tune with yourself, there's a level of confidence, a level of self-respect where you respect others. You have this calmness about you, this ease, he said. It is the fact because you know you have knowing about it. A lot of people know things, but they don't talk about it. But they can see things. You can see it much clearer. That's why this call and the information you glean from here, the power you glean from the team is the most incredible. Can you imagine yourself playing a football game without the team members with different skills, like Napoleon pointed out here? This is why the beauty. This is the beauty of us all. You seek the knowledge. So when the time has come that you have this inventory that you can call upon it at any time, where you can go ahead and use it to your benefit, to benefit yourself and others, that is the beauty of it all. My friend, the sixth sense is nothing more than when you're giving attention to something. You put your attention, the passion into it so much that these little things called hunches start to come. They start to come in the direction where you are putting your concentration on and you respect them. It is so incredible. Melvin, you did a marvelous job of explaining this in a short time, and it's incredible. Take notes. Reflect back on this call. And you're going to realize that in your past, in your life, when you reflect, you're going to see that you've come across the sixth sense many times and you've dismissed it because you've lacked the knowledge and understanding. So how could you put it into power, into good use? Paul, right back to you. I wish you all a day full with opulence.
Thank you, Rick Martin. I appreciate those thoughts. Star 6, who's next? You know, I might want to jump out here real quick. Anytime the subject of religion or church is brought up, sometimes there can be, I guess here's what I want to say. This call, I want to make sure that everyone understands that coming to this call, we encourage thinking and spirituality. And I want to make sure that everyone understands that we're not here to discourage anybody from going to church, studying the Bible. In fact, I'm someone who has attained great, 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 great spiritual value from studying the Bible and from going to church. And sometimes when comments are made regarding the Bible or church, there can be some confusion there. And I want to make sure that everyone understands that we embrace all that will help us become more spiritual, all that will help us seek out that which will be of benefit to ourselves and others. And sometimes when Melvin makes comments about the Bible and church, it's easy to misinterpret what he's saying. And so I kind of like to just jump out sometimes and clarify and make sure that nobody misinterprets what Melvin is saying. Melvin, a lot of times, likes to encourage us to think for ourselves and to not just blindly follow. And that's really all he's saying when he mentions the Bible and when he talks about church. He's not discouraging from any of that. He's just encouraging us to think, use our minds, process ideas, seek spiritual enlightenment. You know, by looking within and by reaching out, and that's actually a good thing. You know, last night I was watching. We've got Netflix, you know, at my house, and Todd Young on the call. He's mentioned several times to me in the past that one of the things he does is rather than watch TV at night, like rather than turn on, you know, watch the news or watch, you know, movies or I mean, not necessarily movies, but just rather than just turn on the news and watch things that aren't going to enhance his life. What he does is he says on Netflix, there's all these documentaries that you can really learn so much from. So I've been doing that a little bit in my life. And last night, I sat down after dinner and turned on the TV and pulled up Netflix. And I was looking at documentaries. And there was a documentary on there about Jim Jones and Jonestown, that event that happened in 1978 where there were over 900 people that gathered around this religious leader. Now, this is an extreme example. This is an extreme example, but it's a relevant example when we talk about, you know, the power of giving over our beliefs to a charismatic leader. And so what happened with Jim Jones, most of you probably are familiar with the story, but if you're not, what happened was there was this very charismatic leader named Jim Jones. And when he was a little boy, actually started when he was a little boy, he would go out in his backyard and he would preach, and he would have neighbor kids come over and listen to him. Right when he was from a little boy, he started doing this. And as he grew, he got better and better at what he was doing. And he actually started using manipulation in his preaching. He started, using faith healings that were staged, that were not real, but he was using those in his preaching to gain influence over the minds of his followers. And this all started, I think it was in Indianapolis. They ended up moving out to California and grew quite a following. He became a strong local force in politics. And then there was a newspaper, it was a magazine that was going to come out with an expose. They had talked to several members who had left the church and basically said, hey, you know, this isn't what it looks like. Because they had this public appearance where they were engaging in social service and helping people and so on and so forth. And what was really happening was behind the scenes, this Jim Jones was extremely controlling. They would actually beat their members that would fall out of line publicly. They would pull people up in front of the congregation and beat them. And so this magazine was going to do an expose on him. Well, what happened was Jim Jones said, you know, hey, we got to get out of here. We got to go down to Guyana, which is on the northern tip of South America. And they had this community already developing down there. Well, they ended up going down there with 900 people. And to make a long story short, he somehow convinced through persuasion by some and through force by others, over 900 people to drink poison and die and kill themselves. And as I watched this, you know, watched this documentary last night, I just kept saying to myself, this is such a in the negative manner, obviously, fascinating example of what can happen through the negative use of the power of belief, and also through giving away your ability to think, reason, ponder, look inward, to give that control completely over to an outside force. And I just thought I'd share that because it's an extreme example, but I think it kind of clarifies a lot of times what Melvin is talking about. And I know I get a lot of comments from people who, you know, hear Melvin say things, and they're like, well, you know, why does he bash on religion and bash on the Bible and bash on this and that? Well, it may sound like he's doing that, but when you listen further to really what he's saying, as I have tried to listen with an open mind, he's really not bashing on that. He's just trying to encourage people to not blindly follow and to, you know, think, use your mind, process ideas like we're learning how to do on this call, and to seek inward inspiration like we're learning in this chapter to reach out and connect with infinite intelligence. So I just felt prompted to make those comments. Let me go ahead and open the line. Star 6, come on out. Who's next?
Hey, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Mark.
Yes, this has been an awesome chapter, and I do appreciate Melvin's comments. And we do need to draw, just as it said before, question everything. Even if we think it's true, we need to question and make sure that it is, and that we do need to follow our heart, and we need to expand our minds and expand our thinking. But I appreciate Melvin's comments always, that he always comes back to a balance. We have to have a balance in our life. I appreciate you sharing that story about Jim Jones, because at one time he laid the Bible down on the stage and stepped up on it. He said, "You folks, you don't need to follow this anymore. You just follow me. I'm your guide." And that is a prime example of how one took his imagination and grew a strong subconscious mind to where He wanted people to follow him, and he became a magnet. And he showed people how much he cared about them, and then took that and used it for evil, and drew a lot of people into, well, like, what did you say, over 900 people was it took the poisonous drink, and they thought they were doing good because Jim said it. Jim Jones became their leader and mentor, and he became their god. He became everything. He allowed his imagination to overrule his life. He took that to the nth degree, I would believe, and to the place where he was even, well, he started running from authority because he apparently did have one weakness. But yeah, we do need to be careful how much we allow. Even Napoleon Hill, Dr. Napoleon Hill, said this morning in that chapter that, you know, he had to get away from this imaginary council for a little bit because he was slipping to the, it was getting to the place where imagination was almost becoming reality, and he wasn't sure which one was which, and so I had to back away from it. So yeah, our imaginations are strong. We can, because I remember as a kid, I still do sometimes just let my imagination run, and sometimes we have to hone in on it or rein in on it a little bit because it can get away from us, and we can, but we do have to definitely have a balance. We need to, and I appreciate what Rick had to say too about we have the tools here, and we have to learn how to use them properly. I mean, you can have a hammer, but if you don't know which end to swing at the nail, or you could hurt yourself, or you could just damage the wood or miss the nail completely. So we definitely need a balance. We need to have structure to our lives. We have to have, and take time to allow our imagination to see where it will take us, and gain, and knowledge is power. But we have to have the right knowledge. We have to have the right tools in order to gain what we need to, what our goals are and what our aspirations in life are. So we definitely need to have balance. We definitely need to, we have to remember that the scriptures were written by man, but inspired by God. And there has been some, you know, that through the years, there were certain translations where the essence of what the scriptures were saying has been marred a little bit. So we have to be careful of that too. And if we go to the infinite intelligence for our answers through prayer, which I mentioned before, it's the royal telephone. We'll never get a busy signal. We'll never get put on hold. He will listen to us. He will hear us. And when we do go into that quiet meditation, that's when he speaks to us, because he only speaks in a still small voice. And even though he's a mighty God, he spoke the earth into existence. And we do definitely have to question and seek truth, because when we seek the truth, those who seek the truth will be set free from the burdens of this life. Not that they won't come, but they will. But we can gain strength and power through ourselves seeking truth. And if we have the proper knowledge, which Jim Jones at first had the proper knowledge, but he just took that and turned it upside down. And we can see what the results of that is. So we do, and the scriptures are full of examples of what we shouldn't do. So, yeah. And Napoleon Hill's pointing that out too. There are certain things we shouldn't do. When our imaginations get too far, that we are now living in an imaginary world, we need to back off, because we can lose our sense of direction and be caught up in that. So just some thoughts I thought I'd share this morning on that. So I appreciate everything you said. And it's these calls just keep, you think you have, we think we have the best call, and then the next day it's even better yet. So I'm fired up. It's just, this is just so great, and I appreciate it. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate those comments. Star 6, who's next? We do have time.
Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning.
This is Levy.
Hi, Levy.
I just wanted to make a really, really quick comment. As far as, yes, we are supposed to question everything. We are born with that in us. Nobody has to tell us. When you think about all those who have children, or even those who haven't had children but have been in the presence of children, one of the first things you'll find is that children question everything. It's always why, but why? I know my son is infamous for why, mommy, why? Why? And if the answer is not sufficient enough to satisfy his curiosity, he will ask me why again. So we are born with it. We kind of lose that. We kind of get conditioned and brainwashed to follow the herd. But normally most children are born with it. We are all born with that instinct, and we just kind of need to tap back into it. So that's all I want to add to the call.
Oh, thank you. That's a great, great addition, and I had to chuckle because my children, yeah, question everything, everything, everything. Appreciate that, LaVie. Star 6, who's next?
Good morning, Paul.
Neville, good morning. Go ahead, sir.
All right. great morning this morning. And this chapter is on it's just my imagination running away with me. Oh, it's just my imagination. You cannot allow your imagination to control and running away with you completely. We need imagination, and we must follow through. This morning was an awesome, it has been an awesome call from you, Paul, Melvin. Oh, I'm going to come back to him shortly. Rick and Mark, you all touched on some awesome, awesome things. And I was reading last night, broke one of my promises last night on Red Lake. And I was reading a book by Charles Hanel. And the book by Charles Hanel, who is one of the persons that Napoleon followed, the book that from Charles Hanel is called The Master Key. And it was a system of lessons that was done in that time, weekly lessons, 24 lessons that were mailed out to people. And eventually they put in a book. And one of the last thing in the book of the Master Key says, Father is the universal mind, and that he does really and truly dwell within you. In other words, you will come to know that the wonderful promises made in the Bible are fact, not fiction, and can be demonstrated by anyone having sufficient understanding. Melvin speaks. He clarifies things, but sometimes people tend to, if they do not understand where he's coming from, they tend to feel that he's denouncing the Bible, or he said, no. As a matter of fact, each time Melvin speaks, he magnifies the Bible to me. He shows me the Bible. And if you only have a cursory knowledge of the Bible, and the Bible is like Think and Grow Rich. The more you read it, the more you know you don't know, and the more you learn. So the more you read it, the more you For example, Melvin came up this morning with the word disease. And disease comes from the word dis-ease. When we feel uncomfortable in our body, like when we overeat or we eat the wrong thing or we drink too much, we become dis-eased. And dis-ease leads to disease if it becomes progressively worse. Now, just to take something out there quickly so we can understand the Bible on a whole. The Bible tells you that in Genesis, I think 1:29, that the trees were put there and the fruits and the seeds with them were put there out of food. So it's not a matter of fact that things are not in the Bible. It's there. Everything that I've read and I come to understand in Think and Grow Rich and many books, everything comes from the Bible. It is. They talk about the father of medicine. What's his name? Greek guy? Slipped my mind a bit. But the comments he made about certain things comes from the Bible. 90% of what's written, as you think, as a man thinketh, so is he. Your wish is your command. Even everything that's coming here comes from the Bible. So those of us who follow our religion, sometimes based on what we are taught, our minds are controlled. We no longer think for ourselves. Think about Marley says we've got to free our minds from mental slavery. We must free our minds from being controlled by anyone else, because otherwise the Jim Jones situation takes place, not so much in a severe situation as did then, but it goes on continually. We cannot be there, and that's why we're on this call. We are on this call because we want to free our minds from the restrictions and bondages that we have held us back this time, and allow us to think for ourselves, use the imagination improperly, and as we use our imagination and think for ourselves and do what we got to do, it goes back to chapter 4, because the sixth sense is the heightening of the subconscious mind. That's what it is. We have reached a point where our sixth sense, all the things we have learned and studied, we have practiced, the subconscious mind through the universal father, through the ether, is now controlling and helping to control and direct our every action. And that is where I believe I want to get. And I'm truly a Christian who trusts God and believe in Jesus Christ and try to walk by faith every day. And not by sight. And trying to do what I need to do to be a success. So, people, do not get offended. Listen to what is being said. Do not use the first thing to jump back and say what it is. We are among brilliant people. We have a mastermind group here. This group will allow you to stretch and stretch and stretch. When Doc comes on, when the other guys comes on, and they explain different things, and you see how it goes, and you learn different things, allow yourself to grow. You're listening to people who are honest and genuine in their expression, and we need more of that honesty in all that we do, even if you disagree with someone. As long as you're coming from a point of honesty and integrity, you will be able to glean from it the truth, and the truth is what we're all seeking. With the truth, you will be set free. Don't care what anybody tells you. The truth is what sets you free. Not some lies, obviously, going on in politics today. No. As Americans, as people, as human beings, the truth. Look for the truth. Seek the truth. Walk with the truth. And guess what? You'll walk with love in your heart for everyone and a smile on your lips each and every day. God bless you all. I love you all and all, and continue to do what you're doing because you're uplifting each other, even though some people at times get upset. Back to you, young man. God bless.
Neville, you make me smile. Appreciate those comments. Star 6, we have a couple minutes left.
Darren out of Brooklyn.
Yes, good morning. Darren?
Yes, sir.
Hey, go ahead, Darren. Thanks for being here today.
Great, it's a pleasure. I'm a first-time caller. And I was so moved by the experiences, what has now become my morning ritual, after being introduced to this call sometime and taking the opportunity for my fourth week of really absorbing and being nourished on a daily basis by this call. And there are several things that has profoundly affected me and has propelled me to even experience, you know, some things that I would say I would otherwise been taken for granted. But one of the things I really want to focus on, since we're on the topic of discussion, was divine guidance and that sixth sense. And some of us on the call could recall about 2 weeks or so, Paul had experienced a traumatic experience with the passing of his grandfather. And it had such a profound effect on him, but it was such a nourishing relationship that he shared with us 3 life lessons as a result of that relationship. Short but very nourishing relationship. The first thing you mentioned to us, Paul, or life lesson, was to seek divine communication. The second thing was to treat others the way you want to be treated. And the third thing you mentioned was to seize the moment. In other words, wherever you are, be there. Now, to focus on the first one, which is the seeking of divine communication, I have to tell a story about my 16-year-old. Now, my 16-year-old, about 8 months or so, I've developed a passion for classic video games. And my wife and I was really perturbed by this because he has all the other modern video games, but he has just zoned in on these antique or classic video games and has even gone as far as to commission some members of his family in various countries to look for these games for him, the control, the console, the games, etc. And so much so that, you know, he have them actually reporting on a timely manner, to, you know, on the status of their findings. So he has some of them looking in, you know, in flea markets, in antique stores, etc. He has also commissioned my service by having me take him on several occasions to places like Goodwill and the Salvation Army, you know, so that he can look for these games. Well, after doing so, like I said, for about seven, 8 months now, you know, I would say like two Saturdays ago, I took him again at one of our routine trips to both Salvation Army and Goodwill, and he came up empty as he usually does. And then I say, son, let's get, you know, some lunch. Let's get something to eat. And again, I'm in Brooklyn, New York, so it's a thriving, bustling, you know, environment. And I remember we stopped for lunch at a busy street. And after getting lunch, something inside of me said, make a U-turn on this street. And I'm talking about a very active, busy street. You know, and after navigating the traffic, I made a U-turn. And again, something in me said, go up this side street, which I did. And while driving down one of these back roads, we came upon a couple who was selling what was performing equivalent to like a garage sale. And something in me said, son, his name is William. I said, Will, let's pull to the side and go and see if you can find, you know, your games there, if they may have it. You know, and my wife, who was sitting on the right side, said, come on, babe, come on. You know, we've been looking for these things for so long. You know he's not going to find, you know, those games there. And I said, babe, listen, life and death is in the power of the tongue, babe. You know, speak life. Let's just pull aside and check this out. Well, we came out of kind, and it was brought to my attention a fog machine, which I've also been interested in acquiring. So I, too, jumped out of the car and moved towards the fog machine, and William was then distracted by something else, some other gadget they had there. And I had to say, son, did you ask them about the games? And then he said, oh, yeah, that. And then he proceeded to tell them about the Super Nintendo and these other classic games. And out of the blue, the gentleman said, oh, yeah, just look in this little cardboard box on the side, you know, just check that out. And I tell you, man, you know, there are miracles. You understand? And my son went into that box, and in this little rustic cardboard box, he was able to get these games that we were looking for months. And not only was he able to get one game, because the guy didn't have one of the power sources, he said, you know what, why don't you take this other game? Which turned out to be another game he was looking for, which was this Sega Genesis or what have you. So, folks, all I'm saying is that it touched my heart when, you know, being on this call, we are talking about six senses. We're talking about Paul, talking about seeking divine communication, which I have since translated to be open to divine communication, because God does speak to us. And he does guide us. And there is such a thing as a sixth sense. And I was guided by that sixth sense, and I submitted to it. And as a result, you know, we experienced a miracle. And right now, I make reference to him, to that experience to him, so he too now could also understand there are powers that are, you know, we may not see. You understand? And there are principles in place, but we have to be in tuned and open to it. And with that, Paul, I just wanted to relay that story and send it back to you.
Darren, that was a fascinating story, and just really appreciate it. So relevant to what we're talking about today. You're a great storyteller, man. Wow, that's a great skill you have. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being here and being a part of our community. And folks, thanks everyone for a great, stimulating mental discussion. Really feel like I've been fed. My mind's been lifted up. You know, just really appreciate the community here and the sense of honestness and openness in which we accept each other and are willing to explore ideas and grow as people. I love it. Thank you for who you are. Let's get out there today. Make it a great day. Have faith. Take action. Move forward. Have persistence, folks. And we'll see you back here tomorrow morning on the Think and Grow Rich call. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.